to do anything we want. No real sage has ever eaten meat. Not because they're particular about it, but because they follow a sattvic diet. It appears to me that the higher you go in consciousness, the less food you eat. And the food that you do eat is pretty pure. Not for any particular reason, but just the way it is. But still, when you think of all the turkeys that were slaughtered, millions of turkeys, seems strange. Anyway, I welcome you with all my heart. You notice what I said. I welcome you. I did not say my body welcomes you. I said I welcome you. Whenever I use the pronoun I always refer to consciousness. So my I is the same as your I. There's only one I. There's only one person. There's only absolute awareness. That I is consciousness. That I is you and me. So when I say I welcome you, I'm referring to all of us as I. The body has nothing to do with it. As long as we're stuck in the body mind phenomena, we mean I as a person welcomes you. But I as a person has nothing to do with you whatsoever. Only I as consciousness is none other than yourself. That's called ultimate oneness. I received some phone calls from some of you last week about the lesson we had on Sunday. They still can't understand how to solve your problems. And that's usually what my phone calls are all about from people. Everybody appears to have a problem. Whether it's depression or loneliness or lack or limitation or sickness, there's always a problem. Hello. And they want to know how to resolve the problem. There's only one way to resolve the problem, so that it never comes back. And that's not at the level of the problem. That's to go higher than the problem, to ignore the problem, and to realize who it is that has the problem. Think of your problem, if you have any. You say, I have a problem. The mistake that you're making is you're identifying I with your body and your mind. Then that's the only problem you've got. Is the belief that you are the problem, or the body, or the doer, or the mind. That is the only problem you've got, no other problem.
Maybe so.
So, as the problem of I is resolved, every other problem is resolved also. And people cannot grasp this. But think about it, if you will. Whenever you have a problem of any kind, whatever it may be, who do you say has the problem? You say, I have a problem. You're referring to your body, aren't you? You're referring to your mind. But if you can catch yourself and say, who is this I that thinks it has a problem? You will realize that I never had a problem. The body appears to have a problem. Only you are not your body. You have absolutely nothing to do with your body. Try to remember this all the time. Your body is under the law of karma. There is no karma, there is no body. But as long as you believe you've got a problem, it's because you believe you are the body. You therefore have to work from that point and realize my body is under its own laws and rules of karma. It has absolutely nothing to do with me. I am absolutely free. When you look at it this way, you become the witness to your body. You become the witness to your thoughts. It happens by itself. You do not say, I am the witness. You say, the witness is observing my body. There has to be an I to observe. Where did that I come from? What is the source of that I? Find out. But if you use the other method, say for instance, somebody is suing you in court. So you say, I've got a problem because somebody is suing me. If you respond physically, and you worry, and you fear, and you believe something is wrong, then you may win the court case or lose the court case. But whatever you do, you have not risen higher than the problem, which means you're going to have to repeat it again and again until you get to the part or to the point where you do not react to the condition. Now, what do I mean by not react? Do you ignore the summons to go to court? No, you don't. You do what has to be done. And you go to court, but you realize, who's going to court? My body is. My body is going to court. But who is my body? There is no body. There is no court. It's all illusion. It is. Really. If you look at it that way, something good is going to happen. Strange as it may seem, you will overcome and transcend that predicament. But if you don't, if you react like everybody else does, with fear, and saying, I'm not guilty, I didn't do it, then you've got a problem. You're going to have to repeat that condition over and over again as it mentioned before. Hello. until you're able to realize nothing has ever happened to I. I is free. I has always been free. Now put yourself in the other position. Say somebody steals something from you and you sue them in court. And this time you're the plaintiff. Again, if you lower yourself to that position, you may win the case and get a judgment. But that is an end of condition for you karmically. It means that karmically, your body is going to go through it again and again and again. If you check the court records, you're going to find something very interesting. You're going to find that the people who sue and get sued come to court again and again. They're always in some kind of trouble, they're always suing, or they're always being sued. It's the same people. It's the same people that go round and round and round. They're in the treadmill, and they never get off. The same with a doctor or a dentist. If you look through the doctor's records and the dentist's records, it's the same people coming back all the time. Once in a while, you get a new patient. But once you get hung up with doctors and dentists, you keep going back again and again and again. They make sure you do. Have you ever gone to a dentist where you haven't found anything wrong with him? There's always a filling you need. And if you don't have one, they'll make one. Because that's how they make their money. What I'm trying to say is, don't get stuck on that level. Raise yourself in consciousness by asking yourself, who's going through this? I am? Who is I? Am I my body? Am I my mind? Find out. Who are you really? When the realization comes that you are not your body, everything will be resolved in an amicable way for all concerned. Why? Due to the fact that consciousness is harmony and bliss. If you become consciousness, you can only experience harmony and bliss. And that includes your body also, due to the fact that you have no body. So what appears as a body becomes harmonious and blissful to you. To other people, you may look like you're dying. But as far as you're concerned, there's nobody there to die. There's nobody there to have a problem. This is something practical you can work with. And the realization, again, is that everything is attached to the I. Everything. The courthouse, the plaintiff, the defendant, the summons, the doctor, the dentist. It's all part of the I. Therefore, don't try to change the things or the effects. Go to the cause and ask yourself, why am I going through all this? And the answer will be because you're a jerk. You won't accept the I. So you have to go through this again and again and again until you do. And that's what happens. You have one experience after the other, and you're identifying your I with a condition, aren't you? And you're saying, aren't you? I'm going through this condition. I'm experiencing this. But that's not true. That's false identification. I am apart from the body phenomena. My body doesn't listen to the I. Remember, your body's under its own laws. Your body does what it likes. Does it ask your permission to do anything? Of course not. When you have to go to the bathroom, does the body ask the I, can I go to the bathroom? It makes you feel that you have to go to the bathroom. When you catch a cold, does the body ask the permission of I to catch a cold? Of course not. It catches a cold. But the mistake has been that you have identified the I with the body. Now you know that I is not the body. I is consciousness. I is Paramabrahman. I is ultimate oneness. I is Satchitananda. And that is the real nature. Any questions about that?
I have a few questions getting back to the problem. You know, we started this with talking about the problem. Buddha's first noble truth, you know, that life is suffering. It seems like there's always a problem, but like Ramana says, the real trick is to find out who the problem is. So the appearance of these things, like the summons or the traffic tickets or whatever, you know, it's a problem in one sense, and in a sense it's really grace, it seems like.
It's grace if you realize the I.
Yeah, it can only turn you in eventually, because sooner or later you can get tired of finding the, you know, dealing with it on the other level, I think.
Unfortunately, what happens, Richard, is most people never get tired. You go through life after life after life after life until they will awaken one day, which is true.
Well, maybe it'll happen, but we just want to be around for it or something.
Ultimately, it will happen. But if they would get to ride together, then they wouldn't have to go through all that. So think about your problems. Do you have any problem? Think. And don't you say, I have the problem? Now can you see your mistake? I has no problem whatsoever. I is completely free. Abide in the I. Grab hold of the I. And the work you do again is you ask, to whom does this come? To me. Me is the same as I. You hold on to the sense of me. Remember, it's only a sense of me. Me doesn't exist. And you follow to its source. How do you follow to its source? Through silence. When you ask, what is the source of me? You keep silence. And the answer will come by itself. Remember, you never answer the question, because it's your ego answering. Whatever answer you come to in your mind, it comes from your ego. In this process, we're trying to annihilate the mind and the ego together. And the only way to annihilate the mind and the ego is through silence. When there are no thoughts, there's no mind. when you try to evaluate your problem and resolve it, your mind is making a lot of noise. Therefore, you can never resolve your problem, really. You may stop it for a time, but it will continue again and again, and come back in different ways to haunt you. As an example, a person has a tumor in their neck. Instead of finding the cause of the tumor, they go to a surgeon, and the surgeon grabs a sharp little knife and says, "I want to cut this out." And of course, you let the surgeon cut it out. Because after all, he or she is a surgeon, they know. And they've got sharp knives. But what happens later? A month later, the tumor grows back on the other side of the neck. So you go back to the surgeon. And you say you need a head transplant. And he cuts off that tumor. So now you've got two big scars. A month later, it goes back on your arm. And you go on and on like that. And due to the fact the surgeon didn't try to find the cause, he merely tried to get rid of the effect. And that's the same thing you do when you try to resolve your problems. You're working with the effect, not with the cause. The cause is consciousness. And when you identify with the cause, the problem disappears of its own accord due to the fact that it never really existed. And you become free. So, if you're having trouble sitting in the silence when you follow the eye, when you ask, "From whence does the sigh come?" and you abide in the eye, and you abide to silence, but you have trouble sitting in the silence, then you should begin practicing the mantra, I. And say that to yourself, over and over again, I. I. This will keep your mind from thinking. It will help to make your mind empty, so that you can sit in the silence without thinking. You have to do something. Again, do not get down to the level of the problem. That's no way to solve a problem, by getting down to its level. Merely rest in the eye. The eye will lead you to silence. And in the silence, there's consciousness. There's pure intelligence and absolute awareness. There's emptiness, there's nirvana. You will experience all these phases of consciousness. If you follow the eye to its source. Any questions about that?
I have a question, but it's, I've been trying to think how to phrase it. You've taught us that by self-inquiry, I thought that ultimately we'll find there is no I. And assuming that that's so, you've also given us the mantra to still the mind that says, as you breathe in, who am I? And then as you pause, I am pure consciousness. And exhale, I am not the body. Well, who is the I who is pure consciousness?
Yourself.
No I.
Yourself. You are.
So the problem seems to be a matter of semantics with our language, because it seems to me like you're talking about two different I's.
There's the I, which is the personal I. And there's the eye, which is consciousness.
So the eye, that's the personal eye, is the one that disappears.
Yes. And then the eye remains as I am.
But I thought you said that the eye disappeared altogether.
The personal eye disappears altogether.
But not the real eye.
The real
eye.
There
is a real eye.
there is a real I as far as it goes. But who needs a real I?
Well, when you, in the phrase, I am pure consciousness, who is that I?
God.
But we're still using the pronoun I.
Because you can't do any better than that.
So that's what I mean, it's semantics, more or less.
You could call it semantics. You follow the personal I, it turns into I am. I am is consciousness, and then there's silence. What you want to achieve is the silence. In other words, you don't want to go around saying, I'm the real I, I'm the real I. Otherwise, it's like a tree saying, I'm a tree, I'm a tree.
Right.
But for your own good and your own practice, it turns into the real I am. And the real I am is silence, quietness, through no thoughts.
So beyond the phrase, I am pure consciousness, is silence.
I am pure consciousness. It's synonymous with silence. It's the same thing. But when you want to express the silence, you express it as pure consciousness. Feel how happy you are when you're not thinking at all. When your thoughts are very few. The fewer the thoughts, the happier you become. The trouble begins when you think a lot. That's why I always say, do nothing past your nose. As soon as you see the thoughts coming out, immediately stop them by asking yourself, to whom do they come? To me. Abide in the me, hold on to the me. Follow to its source, which is I am, or silence, or quietness. Then there's total happiness. Unbroken happiness. Unalloyed happiness. Total peace. And bliss. And joy. Which never goes away. What do you think of that?
Sounds okay.
The sense of I, that you're talking about, holding on to the sense of I.
Yes.
Is that the most I could possibly do humanly, as far as
no, of course
practice goes? I mean,
there are lots of things you can do humanly. You can take a cold shower.
I mean, practice-wise.
Yeah, you can take a cold shower. That helps you. Because a cold shower changes your metabolism. And makes you more aware. Try it.
I don't like cold showers.
That's the object.
Right?
That's just it.
Yeah.
If you take one, say you're feeling out of sorts, and you're feeling depressed. If you take a cold shower, depression will go away. And then it'll give you... If you forget about it?
Well, you forget about the depression because you're so...
That's it. Sure. Many changes come. But then, it gives you time to practice. Whereas before, you couldn't practice because you were too depressed. But now, depression lessens because you took a cold shower. And you're able to practice. You're able to go within. Whereas before it was sort of virtually impossible to do.
Okay.
You were too caught up in the problem. Or you can become the witness and just observe your depression. Observe your actions. Just watch, look, intelligently, systematically. Watch your thoughts. Become aware of your thoughts, aware of your feelings, and do nothing. That also quiets the mind. everything you do, all of your sadhana, is to quiet the mind, to make the mind still. That's what you really want. Therefore, use whatever method you have to in order to still the mind. There's nothing really profound about it. It's simple. You want to quiet the mind. When the mind is quiet, your real nature ensues all by itself. Everything happens by itself. But when your mind is noisy, then it appears that you have to work diligently to do something to change your consciousness. Whereas in truth, there's very little you have to do. Simply practice self-inquiry while bhakti. Become a bhakti. When you surrender completely to God, and you say, not my will but thine, and you totally surrender, in other words, you give God your life and your affairs and your problems. But you remember not to give an outside God then. There's no outside God. You're giving it to God within yourself. And then you become that God yourself. They both lead to freedom, to liberation. You've got all kinds of choices to make. And believe me, that's the only choice you've got. The choice not to react to anything and to turn within whatever way you choose. That's the only freedom you've got. Everything else is karmic. Good.
Who has the choice?
The self. The self is self-contained. It gives you a choice as a body to find out that you're not the body. You're doing it all by yourself. I'm talking about the ego self. Of course not, but you believe it does because you've got the problem. As long as you're experiencing a problem, do not walk around saying the ego doesn't exist. If the ego doesn't exist, there would be no need to solve the problem. But as long as you feel you have a problem to solve, then you may know that the ego still exists for you. If we all know there was no ego, then this whole conversation would be redundant. The reason we're talking is because some of us believe we've got an ego. Even though we say we don't. And that's why it's not wise to walk around saying, I am Brahman, I am consciousness, I am pure awareness. While you're hurting. And you believe there's something wrong with your life. Or something is not going right in your life. As long as you can feel and see that something is wrong with your life, no matter what it is, no matter how righteous you think you are, then you must know you've got an ego and a body. Then you've got to work with the laws of karma to get rid of it. And that's where you practice loving kindness, joy, purity, eating a sattvic diet, and doing all the things that you think they teach you in the yoga. But when the time comes when you become realized, it doesn't give you license to make an idiot out of yourself. And that's something else we should discuss. There are many people walking around today who believe they're realized and they're doing all kinds of foul things. And they say it doesn't matter. They're justified by believing I can do anything I like because nothing exists. But even if you had a thought, it shows you're not enlightened. Because if you were, there would be no one to think like that. You see? Thoughts like that wouldn't even enter your mind. Then I can do anything I want because you're contradicting yourself. You're saying I. The I still exists for you. For you saying I can do anything I like because I don't exist. If you didn't exist, you wouldn't pose that question.
Because it relates to the body.
Of course. So that's how we fool ourselves. But there are many people I used to know in other states, in other countries, that really used to believe they were enlightened. And one wound up in jail, one committed suicide. Because they think this gave them license to do whatever they like. And believe me, when realization comes, you become very compassionate. You become the embodiment of humility. You become a joy for others without thinking those things. It happens by itself. And there's no question about being enlightened and not being enlightened. You don't think you're enlightened. Those words disappear. Those thoughts disappear. There's no such thing as being enlightened. Not just for the Ayani to consider being enlightened and not being enlightened. But the point is, you do not go around committing foul deeds. I know somebody in the class. He's not here today. But he goes to porno movies all the time. And that's neither good nor bad. But he claims it doesn't matter because who's seeing the movie? That's how it justifies it. So if somebody tells me that, I don't even bother to answer. We've got to be real careful. We have to be careful because this path of Jnana Marga does not give you restrictions or rules and regulations. It only tells you to find the I. That's it. And everything will take care by itself. But be real careful. If you have all kinds of bodily feelings and urges, and you think you're enlightened, forget it. It's true, though. Some of the people have read the book The Divine Madman. I don't know if you've read the book or not, but I used to loan it to people. And that's a mistake because people take it literally. They think if you're enlightened, you can go around doing all kinds of things to people for the sake of their enlightenment. Don't even think of that. Because that person we read about in that book is so far advanced, we can't possibly even imagine how he thinks. But many people try to emulate him. Be careful. Any questions about that?
Speaking of bodily urges, you're saying that the sign of those is the sign that you're not aligned?
People ask me usually, well, how do you feel when you become self-realized? And I always make the statement, you become more human, which means you expand. You become sort of omnipresent with love, your feeling of love multiplies. The feeling of humility increases a thousandfold. And you feel as if you are the body of the whole human race. You are the body of the universe. So the urges you get are loving urges. Urges of humility, compassion, loving kindness. All the other urges are bodily urges. If you realize they go away. It changes and modifies them. There's a lot of controversy about that. But you can use your body and still have sex if you want to. But the feeling is completely different. It's beyond humanity. And you cannot describe it. It's ineffable.
Maharshi, I believe, said that you could be married or unmarried or rich or poor and still be real.
Exactly. It had nothing to do with that.
So if you were married, presumably you would still have bodily, human-like.
Some would and some wouldn't. It depends.
But you're saying that it would be different, it would be more transcendental.
It would be totally different.
It's a particular day for me in that area due to meeting someone I've known for a while, and it was real interesting what happened. It was a very big feeling of being confined in a small space, you know what I mean? Kind of physical energy. And then all of a sudden it just changed a couple hours ago to this feeling of just being totally at home and secure in the universe. And I was listening to this beautiful music, and it kept saying, passing through life like a child, never knowing the reason, I've never strayed far from home.
Mm.
Like the chorus or something.
Mm.
It seemed like that was the answer to everything, was where is home? Because those feelings kind of take you out and away from where you really are.
Mm.
And when that sort of happened, it was like the most peaceful and quiet my mind has ever been, I think.
And
also
good.
Very, like a lot of relief, that's why I was laughing a lot.
That sounds good.
Yeah, but it was like, I had been talking to Jim about it earlier because it was kind of an intense experience for me. And there's a real desire to sort of be human in a certain way.
Well, you shouldn't really deprive yourself.
Yeah, but even more so, kind of more like a certain sense of wanting to be indulgent, but in a different way than ever before. You know, like totally being one with the experiences that I want to have in a certain sense, even if they only happen in my mind, you know.
Mm.
And that's what seemed to facilitate. All of a sudden it's like an explosion of feeling really good, was that I quit judging it or trying to stay back.
That's it, yes.
Yeah, you know, it's like whatever was happening, even if it was a fantasy, that was reality too.
That's it. What I was trying to say before is you do not think about it.
Yeah.
There are no thoughts saying, should I or shouldn't I? It's just the experience. It's beyond words and thoughts. This is why I say all the time, when you get to that stage, it's ineffable. There are no words to describe it. So we keep silent and we don't say anything. And that describes it better. So when I say we become more human, I mean you expand. You take in the entire universe. And you realize that everything is the self and I am that. But that becomes meaningful to you. You do not use the words like I just mentioned. You just know it. You perceive that that's the way it is. But there are no words going through your mind. There are no longer words like, should I or shouldn't I? Am I right? Am I wrong? Is this good or is this bad? Just by being you, you are an asset to the human race, to the universe, to everything. But there are no words to describe it. There are no laws that you have to follow, no rules that you have to follow. for you, it's virtually impossible for you in that state to hurt anybody. You're beyond being hurt, and you're beyond hurting anybody. It's a state of total humility, total compassion, and total loving kindness.
Without, like, motivation or any sense of intention, too, it seems like.
Yes, that's true. Because there's nobody there to be motivated.
And nobody to be hurt or...
That's the ego, of course. Only the ego can be affected or hurt or motivated. But when there's no ego, there's nothing to think. And the doer is gone. And whatever you do is automatic, spontaneous. And it's an asset to the human race, as I said, and hurts nobody. So again, if you still have to think, is this right or wrong? Or you still have to think, am I hurting somebody? Am I making the right decision? Then you may know your ego is alive and well.
But yet at the same time, isn't it good to go through those processes until one's ego is gone?
To watch yourself, to observe yourself, to be the witness to that which is happening. And that again leads to silence.
Otherwise you're caught up in the game again.
Of course. Do not react to it.
Robert, in my case, there was a lot of fear of hurting somebody that was causing like a real... compact, you know, like memories were still really involved, and it seemed like what I was trying to do about it was to find somewhere where I could be safe, and then as soon as that was, I realized that was hopeless, you know, then the whole thing seemed to revert to a completely different, it's like the world shifted entirely. You know, it's like the fear of being hurt or would I hurt somebody was a memory that, you know, it's almost like living a past way.
Well, that experience lets me know that you're half baked.
What's that?
You're half.
How old were you?
14.
But you had had other spiritual experiences even before that.
Yes, I did. And then after that, I spent the rest of my life confirming what I felt. I didn't know any names like I do now. You can call that as you like. Because in order for me to sit here and talk to you, I had to learn the names of these things, like ego, consciousness, abideness in the self. I was just that before, but there was no name to it. Now I've given up names.
Well, it was like Maharshi had no formal education or religion, and yet he could respond to
questions
about scriptures.
Yes. Well, what he did afterwards, as people gave him all the scriptures when he was in the cave, they used to bring him all kinds of books in the classroom and read them and go through it, and he confirmed his feelings.
I mean, was he already instinctively there?
Yeah. So he was able to talk to them.
Is it a need to confirm, or is just that just part of the body mind?
There was no need, but I used to think I was insane. I used to think there was something wrong with me because I just didn't respond.
You didn't then do a deliberate sadhana to get to that place because you didn't even know it existed.
Exactly.
It happened. And you didn't even know what happened.
I had no idea whatsoever.
When you say you thought you might be insane, of course you weren't suffering.
No.
With that. You just...
Except I saw people in a different light. And they were all responding to different things than I was. So I was sort of left out.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Therefore, I wanted to investigate what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
but probably some people have to do sadhana, some people don't.
It depends on your karma. It doesn't exist. Everybody's different. But self-realization comes to everybody in the same way, basically. But if you have to do sadhana, you have to do sadhana. As long as you believe you're the ego or the body or the mind, then you have to do sadhana. And it helps you to become quiet and still. And when you're quiet and still, realization comes of its own accord.
And the people that don't have to do sadhana are reaping the fruition of their karma.
We can say that.
In your case, you didn't have to do any sadhana. You were like a fifth patriarch in the Zen. You heard the Diamond Sutra being recited on the street corner in Shanghai, and that was it.
That's about the size of it.
Selling straw sandals. The fifth patriarch of the Zen tradition. Well, I didn't either. That's the resistance tradition.
If a person has no ego, do they know that?
No. Because there's no one left to know. There has to be a knower to know whether you've got an ego or not. But when there's no knower, there's no ego. You're just empty. There's just plain emptiness.
So as long as you think that you don't have an ego,
then you've got an ego.
So there's a state, essentially, it's a state of not knowing yourself, really. Not knowing you're even there.
That's it.
Like that song, a child passing through, never knowing the reason, never straight apart.
True.
So there's awareness that there is no ego in that particular body mind.
There isn't even awareness. Because who is left to be aware? There's nothing.
And yet you're expressing the fact that there's no ego
there. Yes.
Where my mind wants.
And so again, we go back to the sky is blue. There's no sky and there's no blue. If you investigate. So if you investigate yourself, you will ultimately find that you never existed. Then you do the sadhana things. Exactly, that's why we have all these techniques.
You do the whole thing.
But while you're doing the sadhana, you're not affirming, but rather, in other words, you're not trying to logically find it, you're actually trying to let go.
You do it in reverse. You negate the world and the universe. And what's left over is your reality.
So it's not a matter of understanding at all. As long as you're trying to understand it, that's the problem.
There has to be somebody to understand. But if you get rid of that somebody, then understanding is not necessary. Well, there's nothing to understand. That's true. But again, there's nothing to understand, and there's nothing to witness. There's just nothing. But nothing is everything.
Here we are throwing semantic all into the air.
Yes, that's what it amounts to. That's why the silence is the best teacher. When you get to that stage, silence. When you're questioning yourself, and you get to the stage we just discussed, don't argue with yourself. Just keep still. Keep quiet. And you'll be amazed at what happens.
I keep getting to a point where it's, or I can't grasp it, or it doesn't make sense.
Then just keep still. Be still. Be still and know that I am God. when you're still, the I Am knows itself as God.
Being still seems to be the hard part. Still in your mind, you know. Your mind is so busy.
It appears to be. But if you use the processes I share with you, you'll get there. You can't lose with the stuff I use.
Today it seemed like, you know, I had a problem. I was suffering, and I could approach this in sort of a gradual way. And I was down in Santa Monica as the sunset was coming, and I was walking around, and I noticed the mind was agitated. Then I sat down and started, you know, basically quieting down, and the beauty of it was unbelievable, and the mind started getting gradually more quiet and quiet and quiet. But then it started again when I got up. So I came here and I drove in the traffic, and instead of using that sort of technique of kind of starting with the outer and gradually working to the inner, I quickly noticed that I went into a dream world as soon as I started thinking that everything was a dream world. And that silenced the mind, and it was like a total silence, and it stayed, you know, for about the last hour in a totally effortless way.
Mm.
And I'd never seen that that sort of approach before, but it was like a kind of a recognition that my reaction is to always go away from the silence. And as soon as I kind of acknowledged that, the silence was there. Whereas the other way, it was kind of like trying to almost, you know, stop the vibrations of things and gradually bring them to a quieter place.
Everyone is unique. If that process works for you, use it. That's good. I'll never tell you to change anything if it's working for you. If it quiets your mind, it's good. Anything that quiets your mind is good. Any technique. But the fastest way is through self-inquiry.
When you do self-inquiry, it's not really a matter of cause and effect, though, is it?
No. It goes beyond that.
Is it karmic?
Self-inquiry?
No, just as I said, when you do self-inquiry, it's not... Whether you get a result is not a matter of cause and effect.
You're not looking for a result.
But whether something transpires...
Nothing really transpires.
Whether nothing transpires.
You're simply asking yourself, who believes all this? Who needs anything to transpire? It always goes back to your ego.
But I'm saying whether it's not a matter of cause and effect, it's not a matter of, well, I do self-inquiry, therefore I get this. It's more a matter of, if self-inquiry works, I get lost in it.
It's a matter of becoming quiet. It's a matter of emptying your mind. And through self-inquiry is the fastest way. When you ask yourself, who has to empty their mind? And you realize you have no mind to empty. There never was any mind. And you become free. Do not make it complicated. Keep it as simple as possible. Just follow the eye to the source and say I if you have to. I. If you use that method, you will notice that the space between I becomes greater and greater. And it's that space that you have to merge with. Between the I. It's like when you get up in the morning, before you become awake, that's realization. It's unconscious realization. But try to catch yourself tomorrow morning. As soon as you open your eyes, before you have a chance to think, in that split second you realize that's realization. But try to be conscious of it and hold on to it during the day. the same thing happens before you fall asleep. The moment you before you fall asleep, you realize, if you can catch yourself and hold on to it, then you're in yourself. That's it. And you're at peace.
When you say, try to be conscious of it, who's conscious?
You are conscious.
The ego.
The ego, yes. You have to work with the ego mind.
Conscious of its non-existence.
The ego is conscious of its place before you wake up or before you go to sleep. You become conscious of it. And then the ego disappears. And only consciousness prevails. Yes. The mind is quiescent. No thoughts have come yet.
Becoming conscious of the ego still?
Becoming conscious. The ego becomes conscious of the quietness. And the ego disappears. You do not become conscious of the ego.
No, that was just speed.
Yes.
I'd like to be able to become conscious, more conscious of, to stay in the I am in the midst of everyday activity.
If you practice the mantra I at night and in the morning, you will find that during the day you're more calm and more peaceful. It'll happen by itself.
So often after I've been involved in activities and completely forgotten to bring everything back, I realize that I have been asleep, have not done this, have not been able to bring it back, and I can feel how different everything would be if this had happened.
Because never be
quiet, it's not so hard.
Yes, of course. But never be angry at yourself. Never condemn yourself. Never think you made a mistake. Rather observe yourself and realize what you've done in your mind without condemnation. And ask yourself, who went through these experiences? I did. Who am I? And again, hold on to the eye. If you want to, you can imagine you're holding on to a rope. The eye is the rope. And you're climbing down the rope to its end. And that is the source of I. Then let go of the rope and keep quiet and silent and see what happens. You will find that you stop falling and your body just disappears. And you're in a space of bliss.
The letting go must be very frightening.
In a way, but the ego is the rope. So you're letting go of the ego.
What about in the rare moments, at least in my case, when I do reach absolute stillness, it seems what often interferes even more than thought is the sensory perception, like a sound or... sound would be the most frequent I would get.
You have to go beyond that. You have to inquire, to whom is the sound coming to? And again, you go back to I. It comes to me. Hold on to the name.
So you just, who hears this?
Yes.
Who's distracted?
Whatever comes, go beyond it. By inquiring to whom it comes.
If the I were to get a glimpse of the self, if the ego were to get a glimpse of the self, and feel that peace, wouldn't it become inflated and think, I'm at peace, I'm at peace?
No. Because if the ego gets a glimpse of the self, it will disappear.
I mean, just I'm saying, without, not say for instance, like a Nirvikalpa Samadhi, but not a Sahaj Samadhi.
In Nirvikalpa Samadhi, you feel peaceful and joyous while you're in Samadhi. But when you come out of it, you become your old self again.
Yeah, but when you come out of it into your old self, wouldn't the ego tend to think, well, I experienced this, I experienced that, therefore?
If you're inclined that way, it would. But to some people, it's just a passing point. They realize that I've experienced them a couple of samadhi and I want to go further.
Like in Trafora Rahash,
yeah. Yes. Everybody's a little different. That's why you should never compare yourself with anybody else. You never mind what gains anybody else is making. See yourself for what you are. Abide in yourself. Love yourself. Know yourself. Never put yourself down. Never condemn yourself. No matter how many mistakes you make, do not condemn yourself. That's what blasphemy is. When you condemn yourself. Because yourself is really God. Therefore you realize that the ego has been making the mistakes, not God. And you inquire, to whom did these mistakes come? And go through the process again. I've made a mistake again, I have. Well, again, the I has, not you. The I is the body. The I is the mind. But I am not the I. I am, I am.
Would you say that sense of I that you cling to?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that sense of I that you're saying to cling to.
Yes. What about?
Does that feel kind of like love? What does it mean?
Not
I'm
really.
Trying to really feel that out.
What you cling to is your ego in the beginning. You cling to the sense of your ego and you're following it. The reason you're clinging to it is because you want to follow it to its source. It's only when you get to the source.
Well, like right now, I don't even know what it is. I can't seem to find it.
Then you don't have it.
I have this sense of love. And I'm saying what I'm saying is, why not cling to that?
You can cling to that if it's really love. Then by all means, still cling to it. Cling to love. Hold on to it.
It feels like love, and it feels for myself. Even.
Hold on to it and
it feels
see what happens.
Like it's very peaceful.
Hold on to it and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're holding on to the self. You're holding on to it.
It's not even like holding on to it. It's more like it's right there. So you know, I'm not really holding on to it. It's just allowing it to be there.
Do you know it's there?
Do I know it's there? There doesn't seem to be an eye to know it's there. It's just there.
Then it's there. That's good. That's a good sign.
It's just there. Why do you have to hold on to it?
That's right.
There's no holding on to it.
It's just extraneous.
If the self is there, there's never anything to hold on to. But if the ego thinks it's the self and is fooling you by imagining it's love, then you have to hold on to it.
So you're holding on is like just don't, when you say that, don't hallucinate that it's not there in the current sense. Don't put something in its place.
Yes. As long as you are. As long as somebody feels that I have to hold on, then you have to hold on so the feeling goes away and you get to the source.
So you're holding on with the intention of who is it that is experiencing it.
Yes.
You're holding on to it with the objective of doing that process so it dissolves and you go to the reality.
Yes, all the holding on, all the ropes and all the things going on to the ego is all from the mind. It's all a projection of your mind. When you really feel love, it's indescribable. There's no mind, there's no projection. There's nothing going out, and there's nothing coming in. And there's nobody left to feel anything.
You're really telling us what we're experiencing all the time.
Yes.
So when you're doing self-inquiry, and you have a sense of I, and that sense of I is associated very strongly with the body, and everything that concerns the body, you're holding on to that.
You're holding on to the I, because you want to go to its source.
So you said you're onto it, even though you have that sense of the body and everything associated with it.
Yes, that's the I. And you're holding on to the I. You're not concentrating on it, you're holding on to it. But you're following it to the end, to the source.
What's the difference between holding on to it and following
it? You simply observe it. You watch the eye. You watch the eye going down, down, down into the heart.
The intention is to trace it to the source.
Trace it to the source. And it's the source that you're concentrating on, not the eye. The concentration is done on the source, which means nothing, quietness, sounds, and everything disappears.
Well, that's different from holding on to the eye.
You're holding on to the eye, that's the ego. You're holding on to it.
Go.
Because if you let go, you won't be anywhere.
That's okay.
So, no, it's not okay. Because if you let go of the eye, something else will come to take its place, and that is thought.
Another hallucination. You'll think you're a body in a world again.
The idea is to hold on to it. Follow it to the end, to the source, and then it disappears of its own accord. But do not delude yourself into thinking, I'm letting go of the I, because you just made a statement, I'm letting go of the I. There has to be somebody to let go. As long as there's somebody, you're still the I.
When you're not doing this, the forms will start to reappear with a sense of reality all their own, and that's how you know you're not holding on it.
Exactly.
And as soon as you get back to it, the forms have no reality of their own. They become appearances.
Exactly.
They're just moving on their own. There's no doing. Well.
True. You're doing all these things to get to the source, to the substratum of existence.
Oh, but what's the difference between the eye that's attached to something and the eye that's not attached to anything?
The eye is not attached to anything. It's really consciousness. It's the I am. The eye that's attached to anything is the ego.
So the little eye is life is a bitch and then you die.
Thank you.
True.
The ego is really when it's I am this or that. Like when it's just I, that's not the ego.
Right.
Ramana always say, I cannot stand alone. That's the ego. I am big, I am small, I am sick, whatever. Mm. It's always when there's a something with the I that you have the ego to stand.
Yes. When the I is by itself, it's consciousness.
Right.
But the way you get rid of your problems again is to realize that they're all attached to the I. And when you transcend the eye, your problems are gone too. Try that. tomorrow when you've got a problem, and instead of relating to the problem, relate to the eye. Follow the eye, and you'll have no problem.
So you use the eye as a sort of mantra?
No. When you're using the mantra, you're saying, I. But you do that after you find the I to its source. And if other thoughts come after that, you use the mantra, I. It will slow down your mind. It will keep you from thinking.
Following the I
to its source.
At the same time.
Yes.
It's been said that the I is really the ego, the little I is nothing but a bundle of thoughts.
Mm.
And when I've thought that way and trying to watch it, of course, I can't find the little I, so I think, okay, I've just watched the thoughts or sensations, that there's really no entity that you can call it. But if you're going to watch something, all you have to watch are the thoughts or bodily sensations. But it seems there's still a gap. There's something still watching.
Because you didn't ask yourself to who comes the thoughts. Ask yourself that question. To whom do these thoughts come to?
How does the little eye arise in the first place?
It doesn't.
It appears to.
It appears to. That's why you call it the sense of.
How does that appearance occur?
It never occurs.
You always wash it out. I can't get a decent answer.
Because of it's an optical illusion.
There you go.
It's like saying, how does the body occur? We're talking about getting rid of the body. But we're talking about a body that doesn't even exist.
The illusion of an identification which really cannot exist.
Exactly. There is no body, but it appears real. In the same instance, the small I also appears real. But there is no small I.
So there's like an identity crisis.
Always think of the optical illusion that you see and compare it with that. Like the water in the desert that doesn't exist. If you look down the rail tracks, they both seem to turn into one. You ever see that? It's an optical illusion. In the same way, the appearance of the world, the body, God, the universe, is an optical illusion. It doesn't exist. It's like a dream. Remember, when you're having a dream, you will sit there arguing that it's real, just like we are now. In the dream, we're having a class, and we're going through the same thing that you were going through now. Only you wake up, and it's all gone. So when you wake up out of this, it'll be gone too. And you'll be free.
Who's dreaming the dream?
Nobody.
The optical illusion of the railroad is probably the only true optical illusion of any I can think of, because there's two, but you see it as one.
Mm.
And everything is one in reality. It's like an optical illusion is true.
You can see that as one.
There's nobody dreaming the dream, but the dream is being witnessed.
The dream is being witnessed as an illusion.
There's because witnessing of the dream. No witnessor, but there is witnessing of the dream.
There's witnessing of the dream as long as you believe in the witness. Because that concept comes out of your mind.
There is no witness, there's just witness.
Who is witnessing?
No one.
Nope. Exactly, that's the answer.
Now are you happy?
See, we like to talk about witnessing and dreams and all that stuff. That's just for the sake of making conversation.
So you watch the thoughts, but you don't let them get beyond the end of your nose. And then, you go to the self-inquiry. Who's this eye who's watching these thoughts?
Yes. Follow the eye.
Stay with the eye and use it.
Like follow the leader.
When you need to, but follow the eye mostly.
Follow the eye mostly. And realize the whole universe is attached to the eye. Therefore, when the eye disappears, everything else will go also.
This is just a game. Everyone just wants to play. A way of bamboozling itself. Of pretending it is what it isn't.
You're right. That's exactly what it is. Because nothing I said is true.
I recognize that.
It's carefully done.
Why am I bothering to listen to it?
Why am I here myself? Who knows?
Who cares?
I don't know who cares.
I never try to figure it out.
You know, Robert, today it was funny because whenever I'd ask myself, who am I, I'd always feel I don't care. And that felt like the deepest answer I've ever... You know, the feeling of that is incredibly deep. I don't really care.
But be careful about that. Because in your everyday pursuits, you may not care about anything at all, like somebody dying or you won't run to help.
So don't make that personal, you're saying?
Don't make it personal, right. But in reality, there's nobody to care. Who cares? Who cares?
Why would consciousness need to occupy itself with a game?
It doesn't. That's the illusion.
It doesn't, and it's not.
Right. There's nothing happening.
And Dana didn't even ask that question either, did she?
Dana doesn't exist. She appears to exist. What are you reading, Narada? What are you reading?
I was reading this to you that time you were lying down in bed.
Oh, yeah. Would you like to read
it? So I was deciding.
Yeah.
Well, what I was reading was, it is certain that the nature of the mind is empty and without any foundation whatsoever. Your own mind is insubstantial, like the empty sky. You should look at your own mind and see whether it is like that or not. Being without any view that decisively decides that it is empty, it is certain that self-originated primal awareness has been clear and luminous from the very beginning. Like the heart of the sun, which is itself self-originated. You should look at your own mind and see whether it is like that or not. It is certain that this primal awareness, which is one's intrinsic awareness, is unceasing, like the main channel of a river that flows unceasingly. You should look at your own mind and see whether it is like that or not. It is certain that the diversity of movements arising in the mind are not apprehendable by memories. They are insubstantial breezes that move through the atmosphere. You should look at your own mind and see whether it is like that or not. It is certain that whatever appearances occur, all of them are self-manifested, like the images in a mirror being self-manifestations that simply appear. You should look at your own mind to see whether it is like that or not. It is certain that all of the diverse characteristics of things are liberated in their own condition, like clouds in the atmosphere that are self-originated and self-liberated. You should look at your own mind to see whether it is like that or not.
Thank you.
Could you tell us who can't see it?
You can't see it.
Self-liberation through seeing with naked awareness. Translated by Reynolds, John Reynolds. I'll continue a little more. There exists no phenomena other than that which arises from the mind. Other than the meditation that occurs, where is the one who is meditating? There exists no phenomena other than that what arises of the mind. Other than the behavior that occurs, where is the one who is behaving? There exists no phenomena other than what arises from the mind. Other than the fruition that occurs, where is the one who is realizing the fruit? You should look at your own mind, observe it again and again. When you look upward into space of the sky outside yourself, if there are no thoughts occurring that are emanations being projected, and when you look inward at your own mind inside yourself, if there exists no projectionist who projects thoughts by thinking them, then your own subtle mind will become lucidly clear without anything being projected. Since the clear light of your own intrinsic awareness is empty, it is the Dhammakaya. And this is like the sun rising in a cloudless, illuminated sky. Even though this light cannot be said to possess a particular shape or form, nevertheless, it can be fully known. The meaning of this, or whether or not it is understood, is especially significant. Read something from the Ashtavakra. By nature, my mind is empty. Even in sleep, I am awake. I think of things without thinking. All my impressions of the world have dissolved. My desires have melted away. So what do I care for money, or of the thieving senses, for friends or knowledge, or holy books? Liberation, bondage, what are they to me? What do I care for freedom? For I have known God, the infinite self, the witness of all things. Without, a fool. Within, free of thought. I do as I please, and only those like me understand my ways.
How can he think without thinking?
There has to be somebody to think for you to think. But when you're in above an enlightened state, in a realized state, the thinking is spontaneous. You only think of this whenever it's present in the moment. That's why I say you never think further than the nose. You think in the moment. And that's it. Then the thoughts just dissolve.
Robert, is that a clear translation?
I don't know.
It just, like, it did seem like there was someone there saying that. The text before it sounded very transparent.
It comes from a different source. That was pretty clear. He was trying to explain as an ego. Whenever somebody tries to explain something, there's always the ego at work. How else can you explain it? There has to be an ego to explain. And that's why the biggest benefit we get here at Satsang is not what I say, but just by being here. If you truly wish to repent, just sit in silent meditation and see the perfect reality within. For all manners of error merely arise the erroneous thought. And like the morning dew before the rising sun, can perfectly be illuminated through the benevolent light and wisdom. So let's just stay quiet for a few minutes. Peace. How's everybody feeling? Try to stay as peaceful as you are now during your normal activities during the day. Do not take anything too seriously. Just observe the world going by, yet do not react to it. Watch everything. Be alert. But leave it alone. Do not try to own anything. And do not try to give up anything. Just be yourself. Have no feeling that I am the doer. Let your body go about its business. But you stay with the eye. And all will go well with you. Anybody like to say anything else? The next time we meet will be Sunday at 2 o'clock, right?
1 o'clock.
Oh, 1 o'clock.
Sorry.
Yeah, 1 o'clock, that's right.
But ordinarily it'll be 2 after this.
2 o'clock, that's the...
1 o'clock on Sunday.
After that it's 2 o'clock on Sunday.
Yeah.
Was there a question? Consideration of meeting from 9 in the morning to 12 in the morning?
No, we never get to that.
Never get.